Welcome to the Profitable Audience Podcast, where we teach you how to build and monetize your audience. Today, we're going to talk about managing your business in chaos. Now, when you browse your Facebook or your Instagram feed, you only hear about the good things with a business. Like so-and-so made $10 million in a year. So-and-so made $100 million in 24 months. But what you don't get to see is the crap fest that happens underneath. So today, we're going to talk about some of the chaos involved in running our businesses.
All right. And we're actually, we have two different types of chaos today. We're going to talk about straight up business chaos that happens in your business. And then we're going to talk about personal chaos that can affect your business. And unfortunately for you all, I don't think Steve has any personal chaos. So that's just probably going to be all me.
Well, I don't seek out personal chaos, so...
I don't either. But let's start with business chaos, because I think business chaos, in my opinion, is easier to manage than personal chaos, because I think that you have a little more control over what's going on. And you've had, we talked about this before we started recording, I think you've had a good amount of business chaos in the past couple years.
Yeah, in the past year alone, it's been very chaotic. You know, I agree. So what's funny about this episode is prior when we were talking... before hitting the record button, I was thinking to myself, well, what am I going to talk about? I have all this chaos, but how do I resolve it? And my attitude is always, it is what it is. Just suck it up.
Well, I actually think that's a good attitude to have, because when you use the word chaos, typically it's something that you absolutely don't have any control over. So for you, the first thing that I thought of is the container that sank for Bumblebee Linens. So I don't know if people know about that yet.
Yeah, okay, so this is what happened. I think there was just some storm or something in our boat that had our linens for the holiday season. It got involved in some sort of wreck, and I think all the containers on that ship kind of collapsed on one another. So all of a sudden, there were all these products that we were close to running out of stock on that we would definitely run out of stock on over the holidays because all that stuff was on that ship. Now, granted, it was probably poor planning on our part, maybe. Like, we didn't get it early enough. Like, I can't even remember what month this happened now. But usually we get all of our stuff in earlier. But I think due to COVID, all the shipping and everything was in chaos also. So we were even lucky to get a container out during that period. But it happened, and we ran out of stock. So, I mean, it is what it is, right? You just maybe start focusing on other product lines with your email marketing or your text message marketing and de-emphasize the products which were going to be bestsellers over the holidays.
I'm curious, did you raise the prices on the inventory that you had left to slow sales?
Nope, we just let it run out. And then we did have some limited stock in our warehouse. So we kind of switched back and forth between merchant fulfilled on Amazon and our own site.
Did you ever get the products?
We did.
Okay.
We got it around Christmas time, I think. But it was too late by then.
Too late to capitalize on the holidays.
Yeah. Here's the other thing that we did, actually, now that I think about it. So these were, I think, our linen towels, which we embroider on. We personalize those. And so we kind of shut off the non-embroidered listings, and we only focused on the personalization because our margins are like 90%+ on those.
Okay, so you didn't sell anything that wasn't embroidered?
Correct. Okay. We focused just on the personalization to just squeeze out every last dollar of that inventory that we had.
Okay, and I know this is going to be a really hard question for you, but I'm going to force you to answer it. Because I think for a lot of people, when they hear that their container sinks or is in some sort of catastrophic shipping accident, which, like, when does that happen, right? What was it that allowed you to come up with a solution pretty quickly? Like, how did you work through that as opposed to just, because a lot of people, when they have something like that happen, are like, well, screw it. Like, I'm done for the holidays. Pack it in.
Well, okay, so the difference is that we carry a lot of products. I think we have close to 500 SKUs now. And on that container was just a percentage of that, right? So it's not like it sunk our business. Like, if it completely sunk our business, I might have panicked a little bit. But, you know, since we don't set any goals, like sales goals anymore, it wasn't that stressful.
Okay, why don't you set sales goals? Is that another podcast episode?
That might be another podcast episode. We used to set these artificial goals, and it would just stress us out.
Okay.
And then we would meet them because, you know, you push for that goal.
Right.
And then you're happy for like a day, and then you set, you know, inflated goals for the following year, and then it's a stress heap all over again, right? I don't need that stress in my life. I already make more than enough to support the family and I can buy whatever I want already. So why stress myself out over something that's completely artificial?
So what I'm hearing you say is that one of the reasons why you were able to manage the stress of that situation was because you've sort of mitigated that with your goals and your outlook on the business in general.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we've done several years ago. Like, we stopped setting sales goals because we're like, we're making enough. Jen's already happy. And why stress yourself out unnecessarily with something that's...
Yeah. I mean, if Jen's happy, that's all you need to say.
Well, yeah.
Done. Yeah. Next.
Yeah.
Okay. And then another thing that happened to you over the holidays was that you had an employee get COVID.
Yeah. Fortunately, it actually happened over the holidays when we were closed, actually.
Okay.
But when we opened back up, usually in January, for some strange reason, we have a surge in sales because I think people are having like New Year's parties and they buy our napkins and everything. So she wasn't around for that. And that was all hands on deck. And so Jen and I both went in. I was answering calls. I was packing linens and everything. And I mean, that one wasn't that stressful. It was more of like an inconvenience. Like, we had to actually go in and do a lot of the things that our employees would normally do.
And speaking of COVID, we had COVID completely disrupt our business together with Seller Summit.
That was much more stressful in my eyes than anything that happened at Bumblebee.
Is that because I'm involved? That's what I want to know.
I think in the matter of, what, 2 or 3 weeks, we had to shift that thing into virtual mode. And then we had to give all those refunds and then deal with the customers who were asking us questions constantly.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that made that so difficult for us was that, I mean, I feel like with your container issue, you knew you weren't going to get the products for the holidays. So you made a plan based on knowing that information. Whereas with Seller Summit, I remember when COVID first, I want to say came out, but I don't know what the right word is. We talked and we're like, oh, what should we do? I guess we should have the hotel put like hand sanitizer stations. And we started talking about, okay, how do we mitigate this? And then that was like day one. By day five, we were thinking, there's no way in heck that this is going to happen. And then by probably week two, we were thinking, okay, but now that we know it's not going to happen, we don't know when it's going to happen. What are we going to do? I mean, we already had sold almost all of our tickets.
We were pretty much sold out at that time.
We had all of our speakers, all of our sponsors, and people were panicking. So people were panicking about flights and attending. And then there was this whole dynamic of people who were like, you need to do this no matter what. People that were like, we are coming, we want to be there, versus the people that were like, I want my money back. There's no way in heck I'm getting on an airplane right now. This is still like early March. This was all going on.
Yeah, I was actually less worried about the people getting angry because worst case, we just refund all the money and that's that, right? Can't get mad at that. What I was worried about was like the hotel, and the vendors that we were working with demanding their money regardless.
And I think, I feel for the hotel. They're in a tough spot. All hotels are in a tough spot right now as far as their revenue. I mean, the people we were working with got laid off. So we stopped. Our contact person wasn't there anymore. We were dealing with somebody different. So they were in a really hard situation too. But I think one of the things that helped you and I through that was that we both agreed that no matter what, we were going to do the right thing. Even if it maybe wasn't the right thing for our business, we were going to do the right thing by our attendees and our speakers and our sponsors. Yeah. And I think when we decided that that was our philosophy, then it made making the decisions a lot easier.
Yes. Like, I was never worried about making the attendees happy because I knew that was within our power to make them happy.
Yeah.
Right? Very easily. It's the stuff that you can't control is the stuff that always worries me, right?
Yeah.
So we had this one vendor who charged our card after we asked to postpone the event, if you remember.
Yes, I know I do.
And fortunately, it was on the credit card, so we filed for a chargeback.
Yeah.
And, you know, that in my opinion, is just bad business practice.
I agree. And we were also fortunate in that with the event, we work with somebody who helps us, like, book the hotel and does a lot of the intermediary communication. And she fought for us pretty hard.
Right.
So it was nice to have that third party that could come in and sort of be a mediator, because there were times when I was pretty angry at some of the vendors because at this point we were past the whole, it's going to be 2 weeks and everything's going to be back to normal. It was like, nothing's ever going back to normal. And that was pretty obvious, but yet the vendors were acting as if we were still going to all be able to be in person in a month.
Well, I think they were waiting to see if the area was actually shut down for events before even responding to us, which I thought, well, it left a bad taste in my mouth, let's just say.
Yeah.
But it worked out because it was shut down and then we
Yeah.
We ended up not losing any money, but it could have been, according to you, a six-figure sum. I didn't realize it was going to be that much.
Could have been a disaster, yes.
Could have been a six-figure sum.
Yeah.
But that was just, that was probably the most stressful thing that I've actually ever experienced in business before.
I would say it's definitely up there for me. That was exceptionally stressful. Because I think there was the whole vendor side that was very stressful. But then, like, for me, I don't like it when people are depending on me for answers and I don't have them. And I felt like a lot of our attendees and things like that, they were just being genuinely curious. Like, they were trying to figure out what they were doing too. And our tickets are not cheap. So some people had given us $1,500 for a ticket. And, you know, both you and I feel like we want to deliver double that in value. And so that part of it stressed, like, there was this whole, like, double stress dynamic. But I think one of the things that we tried to do really well, and I'm not sure how well we did it, but we tried to over communicate with everybody. And, you know, when we didn't know the answer, we were just really honest about not knowing. And when we had answers, we tried to communicate with people. I mean, we would do live video. We would send the video out. We would send an email. We would send a second email. We'd post it in the Facebook group. We would tag people if we needed to. So I felt like we were trying really hard to be really
good. What's funny is, I don't know if you remember this story, but there was one person who complained that they didn't get any indication of a refund of the ticket. And so fortunately, when you do email marketing, like, there was literally 10 emails and she had opened three of them.
Yeah.
I think I was in a bad mood that day, so I literally cut and pasted.
I remember your red box.
You opened this email at 6:18 a.m. on...
That's when we get a little petty.
It's
probably not the best.
But it's not normal. I think I was just in a bad mood that day.
Well, I think there was too much stress on that, and there was too much totally out of our control. But I think one of the ways that you deal with that is that you find everything that you can control and you nail that down. So there's certain, like, we had no control over how the vendors were going to treat us, but we did have control over, you know, doing a chargeback on the credit card. We got an attorney, you know, so we took the steps. We involved our third party person. So we took the steps we could take to help control the chaos. And then everything else, you just have to be okay with letting that happen, because truly you don't have any control.
I'm just thinking, even recently in the last couple of months, I've had some things bad happened to me, I guess. I mean, every single month I give like a challenge, which we're doing right now, where I go up online and I give lessons for the entire week. My internet went down literally 10 minutes into my presentation. And so what I ended up doing, I panicked at first, and because everyone's like, what's going on? What's going on? Like, when like hundreds of people are just constantly
waiting,
emailing you, like, yeah, you're down. Did you know that you're down?
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, I know I'm down.
I love that. Do you know that nothing's working? No, I'm just sitting here thinking everything's fine.
So the only source of internet I had was my phone. And so what I did is I tried to go live on my phone, and then that was just not enough bandwidth. And so what I ended up doing is I held like a 200-person Zoom call and just turned it into a Q&A on my phone, just audio only. I told everyone to turn their video off. And that actually ended up working surprisingly well. It might be like some sort of model that we do going forward if we want to do like a live Q&A.
Well, that's what you said to me after it happened. We were talking about it, I think, the day after, and you said it actually worked really well to do the live Q&A on Zoom.
Right, because it's voice and not text, which is the way we normally do it.
Yeah, so sometimes I think something good can come out of chaos. But so you... So, I mean, we have some very different personalities, and typically when chaos happens, I panic and have like a complete, I overreact, and you usually seem unfazed by it.
I think it depends on the type of problem. So if it's a tech problem, I'm unfazed because I'm just used to everything breaking.
Yeah.
Like, I expect it to break.
Yeah, and I have such high hopes.
And you expect everything to work smoothly no matter what.
I do.
That is very shocking. Maybe it's because I used to develop this stuff, and I know like how many bugs are in.
It's why when you said I wasn't an optimist a while back, and I said, no, I think I am. I do expect everything to work.
Yes, exactly.
But so how do you, because I definitely am, especially with business chaos, I'm not great. Like, eventually I'll get there, but I have a good like 1 to 6 hours of panic before I can get to the place where I can start to problem solve.
Right. So
and you have about 5 minutes.
For tech, for me, like, I was like, okay, what are my options here? And I just chose one. I think where I panic more is if it's like people chaos or mental chaos, right?
What's people chaos?
Okay, so remember that time I pissed off the entire Etsy community and I was getting hate mails every 5 seconds?
Yes. That was when I first met you.
Was it?
It was okay. Early
so
on.
So that was in 2014 then?
Yeah. Or maybe a little bit later, but we didn't know each other that well.
I did not deal with that well because people were saying really evil things. Like every couple seconds I was getting email. My inbox like blew up that day. And people, I was getting like death threats from people on Etsy. I mean, what do they do? Craft me to death?
They're going to stab you with a crochet needle.
And I ended up crawling under a hole that day. And I ended up just taking down that post that offended people.
Is that the only post you've ever taken down due to that?
That is the only post I think that I've ever taken down due to outside pressures.
Right. So I'm curious, is what was the threshold for that?
The threshold? Well, after like 5 minutes of hate mail.
Like how much hate mail are you willing to take? Because I know you've written stuff that's not, I wouldn't say controversial in like life, but business-wise, you've come down hard on companies and... Given I think some it was popular opinions.
That was the first time that it happened to me.
Okay.
Like a huge flood of hate mail. Yeah. Like now I'm used to it.
Yeah. would you take down that post today, being much farther along in
would
your
I
hate
take
mail?
It down today?
In your hate mail life?
I probably wouldn't take it down today.
That's
actually.
What I think. I think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't, I read it many times and I didn't think it was that bad. It's just people who took offense to it for some reason because, it was tacking like kind of like a business model almost.
Yeah.
It was my opinion on a business model.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is actually pretty common for content creators. That type of chaos is posting something and getting a lot of people being just really unkind and nasty. And it's not like, and I think what happens on the internet is that it's not like people can just be unkind about your opinion about Etsy, right? Or whatever you were talking about. They come after you personally. And that's when it gets difficult because if people don't agree with how I do a DIY project or they don't like my recipe, you know, I've had people say like, that's the most disgusting muffin I've ever made, right? Or something like that. And, you know, there's a slight little bit of hurt feelings there, but it's not like I remember when I used to talk about homeschooling a ton and I had people say like, well, no wonder your kids can't read well. It's because you're teaching them, you know, when they would say something like that and then you're like, you're thinking, oh, ouch. Like, I don't know if that's worse towards me or my kid, but, you know, when people attack you personally, I think it's a lot harder.
I mean, I don't get affected by those personal attacks. It's only, and we've talked about this before, it's only if there's like an element of truth to it.
Yeah. Well, there's an element somehow of truth if my kid doesn't read well and I taught him. I mean,
I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
That's not what I mean, though. There's something a little bit more personal.
Yeah.
That they just happen to know about and then they make a comment.
I want to can you forward some of these to me? I want to read
forward
your hate,
what?
Your hate mail. I want to read some.
No, you think I keep that around as a lasting memory of my journey? Come on.
You have a wall of hate mail on your...
The first thing I do is delete it. I don't even finish reading it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good tip, though.
Is it to just delete all hate mail?
Well, I think with something that... Like, obviously, you can't delete stuff when it comes to, like, your... Like, you couldn't delete an email saying your container sunk, but... I think when it comes to getting negative feedback from your audience, it's better just to delete it.
I mean, okay. So let's, negative feedback is okay. Hateful comments is another thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I
just always ban the person if they're on social media, and on email, I just mark them as spam and that email will never reach my inbox ever again. Or I ban that email address.
Yeah. I mean, lucky for you, you don't read a lot of your inbox has 100,000 emails in it. So there's probably thousands of them in there that have just never been read.
So before we get to the juicy stuff, which is your stuff, there's just a couple of other things that have happened to me where services just miraculously go down right before the holiday season. Like I got banned on email once right before the holiday season. And so all of a sudden I couldn't send emails. I had to scramble to find another provider. And this is why I'm the way I am today, actually. I try to not depend on any third-party service if I can help it, right? So this is why I write my own tools if I can't. Like, if I can write a tool within like a week myself, I will use my tool because no one can ban me or no one can go down. There was a couple of times when I was using a service for my website where their servers went down and that brought down my entire site too.
That's great for you. I don't think that's realistic for most
people. For most people, what they can do is they can have backup plans for some of the major things that they need.
Yeah.
Right. So for example, for Bumblebee Linens, we actually have two backup payment processors.
Okay.
Because one time we got banned from PayPal, which was our main processor, and all of a sudden we couldn't take payments anymore.
Yep.
right? So you should have like a Stripe and maybe one other payment processor. And this is being a little bit paranoid, but taking payments kind of important when it comes to business.
I don't think it's paranoid as far as if you have an e-commerce business. I mean, if you can't take payments, you don't have a business.
Right. I mean, it's not just having the backup. You actually have to implement it in your cart too, you know,
yeah.
And have it kind of tested and ready to go. Anytime you can have redundancy, I think it's important. Just, it's turned me into a paranoid person.
So, what would you say, let's take your three biggest coping mechanisms. So I think one of them is your redundancy. You have backup
right.
plans for everything.
What
would be your next one?
Coping? Mm-hmm. Here's what you always say this to yourself too.
Okay.
It is what it is.
I do. Sucks to
right?
suck.
There's nothing I can do about it.
Yep.
So I may as well focus my attention on solutions rather than stewing in it. It's okay to stew for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But then once you're done with that, then...
Honestly, I think we talk about this, I feel like, in every episode. But I think this is why having that mastermind group or a few people that you're close to is so important, because sometimes when this stuff happens, I mean, I know when stuff happened with Seller Summit, there were a couple people that you were talking to. There were a couple people that I was talking to in the event space, just trying to get perspective of what was, because I think sometimes when these things happen, there's our own opinion and perspective of how things should be. And then there's reality. And then there's the other parties or the other, you know, the other side of it. And I think having people to bounce the problem off of and have them say, whoa, 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 calm down. Or sometimes, I mean, with some situations, I know for us, we've heard, no, 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 y'all are totally right. You know, this is what you need to do. But I think that's important to get that third party to kind of help, so you don't get stuck in the just focusing on the problem.
Yeah. I also want to say this for everyone listening, is that when you hear a story about someone going from like 0 to 10 million in a short period of time, like a year.
Yeah.
It sounds great, but you talk to anyone, I guarantee you that it was miserable.
Yeah.
Growing that fast.
Yeah.
And I remember going to this event. It was down in LA. I was talking to this guy. He grew from 0 to 5 million in 9 months.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he sold. And he was kind of bragging about it in this group. And I walked in. I was like, oh, man, that must have sucked. And he was like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you can't grow that fast from zero and not suck, right?
Yeah.
And then we got into this conversation and he was telling me all these problems. But
yeah.
Before that, you know, everyone just sees that huge number.
Yeah.
And they're very congratulatory. And it was impressive.
Yeah.
But
and most people don't like to talk about all the junk that happens behind the scenes. Like, you and I have a friend who had no e-commerce products and in about 18 months went from 0 to 5 million in e-commerce products. And it's amazing. And she's very happy. And it's been a great business ride for her, but it has been filled with issues. And I think that's what people need to understand, is that no one hits that level of success without a whole lot of stress, especially in the beginning.
And this is actually why I think it's been 4 years now. My wife and I are like, hey, let's just grow gradually.
Yeah.
Because it's manageable. Anytime you have like sudden sales, you usually don't have the infrastructure in place to handle it. And if you do build that infrastructure, that's actually a huge commitment going forward too.
And it's a lot harder to do that on the fly. So it's a lot harder to build that infrastructure when your sales quadruple or 10x in 2 months, because you don't actually have enough time to hire the right people or find the right people or do it all yourself. Because a lot of times we've seen this happen with people who are a very small business. Like, it's them and maybe one or two other people. It's not like they have these big teams. And so they're even to the point, I'm thinking about our friend Kim Sorgis. Her business has really grown a ton. I think, has she been on your podcast? My wife quit her?
Not yet, actually.
Okay. So she sells like homeschool curriculum and Bible studies. And her business has really, really grown in the past 2 years. But it's not been without a ton of growing pains. Everything from like logistics, she ended up buying her own fulfillment warehouse. It's like she decided to go that route, to finding like a project manager. I mean, these are all things you got to think about when you're growing. And in that all comes a ton of chaos as you're also growing.
Yeah. I mean, I've been at companies before where we were just hiring so quickly that no one knew what their role was and there was no one there to train people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's like. And especially during COVID, it's almost impossible to hire too, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think if you're listening, and I probably would have thought this 15 years ago, it's like, well, I'll take all the chaos in the world for $5 million. But at the same time, I think once you live in some of that chaos, you're willing to trade it for slow growth.
Yes, especially if that incremental amount of money that you're going to be making isn't going to be life-changing for you.
Yeah, so, for sure.
All right, let's switch to the juicy stuff.
Okay, what are we going to talk
personal
about?
Personal chaos.
Yes, I'm the queen of personal chaos. You
she
think
is.
I am.
You are definitely. Like, I have very little personal chaos.
You do. Yeah. I have tons of personal chaos.
Yes. So. All right, what do you want to start? Man.
Okay, so I have kids, obviously.
Well, so do I.
Yeah. My kids are just like chaos magnets.
It's so true.
If you think about, like, if I think about in the last, like, four years, my daughter broke her leg and was bedridden. I don't know if you remember this.
This is Peyton, right? Down the slide?
Yeah. So she broke her leg in four places, was in a cast up to her hip for the entire summer. So she couldn't even, like, get up to go to the bathroom. And then my son, Liam, was burned in a bonfire accident, I think within about a year of Peyton breaking her leg. And then my other son was just recently in a pretty horrific car accident and is now basically in a full body cast. So, yeah.
Like
so,
on TV, right? On yeah. Like when yeah, there's, yeah. Yeah.
So that's a lot of chaos because I have a pretty strict schedule for when I can work. And when all of a sudden that gets completely disrupted by the fact that now you need to care for somebody 24/7 because my kids have broken arms and, had stitches and things like that, I think are pretty like manageable. But when your kid becomes like basically an invalid for a temporary period of time, and there's people that are dealing with this permanently, right? That they have children that need care around the clock. I think that's very chaotic to your business because every single thing gets disrupted. And the time that you used to think you have, you no longer have. And your time's no longer your own because you're at their beck and call, basically, 24/7. Yeah. So not only, like, during your workday is it disruptive, but you're exhausted because you're, like, once you're done working, you still have to go, like, make dinner and take care of kids and do all the other things.
So what exactly is your schedule, actually?
My schedule?
I mean, because you're like, in chaos right now.
I am in chaos right now, sure. Yeah. My schedule normally?
Well, no, the chaotic schedule.
I mean, I try to work as much as I can outside of like...
Well, okay, well, what's your normal schedule? Because I feel like your normal schedule is technically your chaotic schedule.
It is. Since there's no always difference. Something going on.
So how do you get stuff done?
Yeah, you're probably like, she doesn't get anything done. She's always behind. I am always behind, for sure. And I also have an issue with saying no, which is, I think, one of the things that you need to do when you have chaos, either personally or in your business, is that you have to be willing to cut out everything that doesn't matter in your business. So anything that's not like directly making you money or is on the path to making you money, you have to immediately stop doing.
That's actually my biggest strength, I would say.
That is my, I'm really, that's my biggest weakness.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I'm good at dropping things on the floor like in an instant.
Oh, I
without
know.
Any remorse. Yeah.
I am horrible. And I will even in the midst of chaos, like I can remember, I think it was Peyton when she broke her leg, someone else had a baby and I was like, oh, I'm going to make a meal. And one of my friends was like, people are bringing meals to your house and you're going to make a meal and give it to somebody. And I don't know, I'm not good at that at all. Definitely. I need to be better, but I know I need to do it. I'm just not good.
So when do you work? I've always been curious.
So, I feel like this is...
Because we're in a different time zone, right?
We are. I'm on trial now. Yeah. So as you know, I get up really early.
When do you get up?
5:30.
5:30. Okay. And then and then what? You have a routine where you work out first.
I work out first. And then I try to get on my computer before 7 and handle any like loose ends. Sort of like, okay, did anything happen overnight? Is my site still up? Are there any like fires to put out? And I try to, because usually those don't take very long if there is anything that can be done really quickly. And then I try to look at my day and make a list of like, okay, what are the things that I have to absolutely get done today? Like today, for example, we're recording this podcast. Mm-hmm. I have to edit a podcast and create slides about editing the podcast. So I was actually working on that right before we got
on. That's meta. Yeah. Okay.
I know, right? It's a very podcasty day. And then we have our webinar tonight. At 5:00.
Okay.
So those are the things that I have to get done today, and then everything else I'll squeeze in as the day goes on.
The reason why I ask is I feel like by the time I get up, your day is done. Is that inaccurate?
What time do you get up? Noon?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I get up, I'm usually up in my desk by 8 a.m.
I think the problem between the two of us is that by 4 o'clock, my day is definitely done. And by for you, 4 o'clock, your day is definitely not done because you're only at 1 o'clock.
No, but it is done. I only usually work until like noon.
That's not true because you send me stuff all the time at like 7:30. Have you done this? Is this done? Where is this? I can't find this Dropbox.
Okay, I don't consider that working. I consider that delegating.
So you delegate after lunch. Okay, good.
Okay, so what I mean by that is like where I'm actually working,
yeah,
I only work till like 1.
Yeah.
But I mean, I might still be thinking about stuff. It's not really working and I'm not typing.
Yeah.
But I might be in the shower and I'll be like, oh crap, dude, you know, did we take care of this?
Yeah.
Tony, take care of this. Yeah.
So I'm typically at my desk until about 3:30 or 4. And then I do not want to go back to my, like, I will not go back in my office.
That's correct.
The difference. Yeah. Which I realize is something that I needed to do. One, because I start early. So I'm usually in my office like 6:37. And then, so to me, like 4 o'clock seems pretty reasonable. And I have kids that are home that need attention and need driven places and need food and things like that. So for me, I've tried really hard because I can remember when I was first getting started in all of this. Like, I feel like my kids never saw me not in front of my laptop.
Mm.
And so for me, it's important to like let the evenings be for them. Like once they get home from school, and because in the morning, they don't really want to talk to me because they're all tired and trying to get ready for school and that kind of thing. So, but I know that the evenings is when, and they kind of come alive in the evenings too, because they're finally awake. So mm-hmm. I try to make sure that that time, and I think when you have chaos going on, that becomes even more important because even like, especially personal chaos, it disrupts everyone in your family's life. So there has to be some normalcy. And I think if you're a person like me, my tendency, if I have personal chaos, I will work more. I will work harder. I will take on more projects so I don't have to deal with the personal chaos, right? I don't have to think about the personal chaos. I'm still dealing with it, right? I'm still taking care of the kids and carrying them to the bathroom, whatever they need. But my mind is not wrapped up in the personal chaos because I don't want to deal with it.
Interesting. So what you're telling me, and this is what I'm hearing, okay. is that to get more output out of you as a business partner,
yeah.
you need to have more personal chaos.
I don't think I could have any more personal chaos than I already have.
Okay.
But I think this is pretty common. I can think of two friends that I'm sure you know who I'm thinking about, who are the exact same way as me, that when personal, and they've had a lot of personal chaos, that they will work twice as hard and take on more projects just to escape the personal chaos.
Hmm. I'm the opposite. Like, I don't deal well with personal chaos. I just won't do anything for a little bit. I'll go running or I'll punch something. And then once that's over with, then I can work
again. Something, not someone. Make sure you clarify.
yes, something. I'm actually very bursty in my output. So we talked about this in a prior episode about getting in that flow state.
Yeah.
And once that flow state's over, I'm done pretty much.
Yeah. But I feel like you don't have a whole lot of personal chaos. I mean, you had your Achilles tear.
Yeah. I mean, that was just... I guess I was bad when I was bedridden, but I just watched a lot of Netflix. It was traumatic because I couldn't exercise.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like the kids, they've been good. I mean, outside the fact that, you know, tutoring math can be a struggle sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody whose kids are in virtual school right now, it's a huge disruption to their business.
Yeah.
My kids go to school, so I haven't had that issue as much. But I had them home for so many years with homeschooling that actually is not a huge disruption for me because that was we just go back to our old patterns, right, from when they were homeschooled.
So how do you cope? So you're telling me that you cope with the chaos by working harder. Does that imply that you just ignore the chaos then?
I mean, that would be very unhealthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're talking about how you run your business in chaos. So what's the right thing to do?
So I think the right thing to, I don't know how many people know this, but I went through a divorce last year, which it's not super public, but I think you don't get much more chaotic than that, even if it's a civil situation. I think that's just, you know, your family breaking apart is pretty tough in general, but I think it's really important, even though like my tendency is to work through the chaos, it's actually really important in personal chaos to not do that and to actually take some time to, I don't even know if it's like addressing it or dealing with it or even taking a break. You know, I went on vacation a couple weeks ago, which you held down the fort. Thank you very much for our businesses. But I realized when I was gone how good it was to just totally get away from everything. Because not only was I getting away from like work, I was getting away from like personal life stuff too. And I realized, like, I think you would say I came back pretty different from that trip, just feeling like, okay, like I had a reset and I'm ready to like get going again. Because I think my whole theory of like working through everything and kind of shoving it down is actually really unhealthy. And eventually it catches up with you and you end up having like, as you know, like I usually get sick once a year for like a week. Mm-hmm. And I just get like deathly ill. And it's like, well, it's nothing but just stress. And my body just is like, okay, that's it. You're done. And I think that's what happens if you don't take a little time off. But I think the most important thing with your business when you've got personal crap going on is that you really have to say no to everything that's not critical to your business. And you have to find people to help you. Like you have to have an assistant or a virtual assistant, whatever you want to call it, to take care of some of those tasks that are not, that they need to be done in your business, but they're not as important.
So from what I'm hearing you say, is that the key to surviving the chaos is to have a kick-ass business partner who will handle everything.
Is that
what I heard?
Yes, that is the key takeaway here. Are you available for other people?
Am I? I don't know.
No.
Depends. I will say that you did come back a lot more blunt.
I did.
So whereas before...
Don't tell on me.
You might not push back on certain things, right. I suggest, but all of a sudden it's like, no, no this, no that. So would you say that you learned how to say no and that has helped a lot too?
I think on that trip, I realized the importance of saying no because I'm a people pleaser. I want everybody to be happy. I definitely don't want people to be disappointed in me. And as you know, like, it's very hard for me to say that I can't do something. I'll figure out a way to do it because I don't want to disappoint anybody. So I read this book last year called Untamed by Glennon Doyle, which actually was kind of a life-changing book for me. And she's kind of controversial, so not everybody loves her, but she says this quote in her book, and it says, she's talking to one of her kids, and the kid didn't want to join a club in middle school, I guess, that her older brother had joined. And so she was kind of talking to her mom, you know, like, hey, I don't really want to do this, but I feel like I have to do it because it's expected of me. And she said, listen, every time you're given a choice between disappointing someone else and disappointing yourself, your duty is to disappoint that someone else. Your job throughout your entire life is to disappoint as many people as it takes to avoid disappointing yourself. But when I read that quote, it was like a light bulb moment for me because I will disappoint myself all day long, but I don't want to disappoint anybody else. And I realized that I had that totally backwards. And I've had it backwards my entire life. And so I think, and you're like, crap.
This is not the business partner I signed up for.
It's not at all. Sorry.
Okay.
This is business partner 2.0.
Where is people pleasing Tony when I need her?
She's gone. She's dead.
All I get are no's now.
The old Taylor can't come to the phone right now. But I think that's really important for people, especially, and I hate to stereotype this, but I think with females, for sure, we have the tendency to not want to disappoint other people and to keep piling stuff on because we think we can do it all. We think we're superwoman and we think we can just continue to take stuff, but you can't. Eventually, you just crack. And that's why you see people that basically have these really successful businesses and then they just basically disappear. Or they're like, I can't. It's not healthy long term for your life and your career to just allow yourself to kind of get swept away in the chaos and just keep piling on. It doesn't work.
I have the opposite problem because you know me. I like to keep my schedule wide open, right?
You do.
And so my first instinct is to always say no. But on the flip side, there's some things that I probably should say yes to. Maybe I'm losing out on.
But I mean,
it's the opposite extreme. Yeah.
Have you thought about? I try to think about it this way when I'm in a good space. Is that what are some things that you said no to that you like now regret? I can't think of very many for me.
Well, the problem is I have a very short memory.
I should start taking a list of all the things you've told me no.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
But I think, too, here's the other thing. Like when your personal life is in chaos or your business life too. You say yes to things because you're looking for some kind of like validation or win because everything sucks so badly that like you'll take on all these things because you want to have some sort of positive
experience. Makes sense.
And so, but at the end, it's a temporary positive and long term, it's not going to help you in your life or your business.
So for me, usually the chaos is one or the other, never both at once. So what happens when you have both at once? Because I remember seeing you a couple times where nothing's working technically for you with your business and you have this personal stuff going on. How do you cope with that?
Well, as you know, I have a very hard time with that. you've seen me.
Well, I've seen you get through it too. So what do you do?
Well, I think one of the things that I don't do well, but when I do it, it works, is just like stepping away from everything. Like, it's amazing. So when I have tech problems and personal stuff isn't going well, I'm pretty sure that nothing will be fixed by me in that moment because I just can't think clearly. And I think we had this happen a couple weeks ago where something wasn't right. And I said, I just need to walk away from it and figure it out tomorrow, because it was too much to try to process through everything. And so, do you remember that? I think it was like within the past 6 weeks that this happened. I don't
remember what it was. My recollection was, you said, I'm just going to step away.
Yeah.
And let someone else fix it.
I did not say that.
Okay.
I probably did, actually. But that is one thing that, like, you and I differ on, is that I am willing to step away and just say, I will pay whatever it takes for this to be taken care of.
That's not true. I mean, I'll pay if I don't think I can figure it out, but I always have confidence that I'm going to figure it out. If it's technical,
yeah.
That is.
Yeah, I don't have confidence in that at all.
Yeah. I mean, if I could pay to take away my mental anguish, I would throw money at that problem.
I mean, I'll take money to leave you alone. But no, I think you have to step away at times. I was actually talking to a friend yesterday, you know, with everything going on with my son, and she was like, how are you doing? I was like, I'm just tired. Like, I'm tired. You know, this is like a long process. And she said, can you just take a day where you don't get out of bed? And that, you know me, and that's just that gives me like panic to think that I could spend a day not doing anything.
You've slept until 7 a.m. before. I know you have.
I know. Crazy. I'm a crazy person. But I actually think she's right that there's certain times, and I don't think we're talking like major life chaos. We're talking like tragic injuries for your family, divorce, you know, death of a parent, something like that, right? Big, big things, not, you know, your nail appointment got canceled, which I know is tragedy for certain people. But I think there actually comes a time where it's okay to just say, you know what, today I'm just not doing anything. Like, whatever the bare minimum is for like my family to function and my, you know, but I think it's okay to just completely, you shouldn't feel bad about sitting in your bed and watching Netflix all day, as long as it's not something you do all the time.
I do it all the time, actually. Seriously.
Maybe that's why you're so balanced and I'm just a hot mess.
Well, no. I don't know if it's good, because when I do that, I don't feel good about myself afterwards.
Yeah, that's my problem.
But there's times when, like, I don't get out of bed until like noon, like on a weekend usually. And I'll just sit in bed.
I'm sure I'm having trouble breathing.
But I feel wasteful.
You don't get out of bed
until noon? Yeah, because... Okay. I'm just watching something really good and I'll just stay in bed until noon on a weekend. But then I get up and I'm like, oh man, I just wasted half the day.
Yeah.
But I do it. I don't know if it's a good thing, because I don't feel good after doing it, especially if it's sunny outside.
You don't feel good like in the moment, or you don't, or do you think it's helpful to kind of like have a reset?
I haven't had to have a reset in a very long time. I think the last time I had to have a reset was my dad passed away, actually.
Yeah.
But outside of that, nothing really traumatic has happened that required a reset. Nothing compared to what you've been going through. Yeah. As long as I've known you, actually.
Yeah. I'm just a cat. I told you this yesterday. I was like, why does this stuff happen to me?
Yes, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly, I don't know. I don't want to take responsibility. I'm not going to do that. But
all right, let's go over some of the key takeaways of this, because we talked about a lot of different things. I think the key takeaway for coping among chaos is, one, if it's something that you can't control, try your best to stop worrying about it and focus on solutions.
Yep.
And what you can do.
That might mean that you have to step away for 30 minutes, an hour, or even 24 hours.
Right.
To clear your head.
And then here's my personal one, which a lot of people probably aren't going to agree with. But if you already are making enough money that you're satisfied with, I would take the foot off the pedal for a little bit and just kind of reevaluate what this growth means to you and how much that extra growth or revenue is going to contribute to your happiness.
Yeah.
Because when I came to that conclusion 3 or 4 years ago, I've been a lot happier with everything ever since.
Well, and I think this is terrible because this should be the wrap-up point, but we have a couple more points, is that the whole point of building your own business is to be happier. So if you are creating an environment where you're more stressed and less happy, what are you doing?
I mean, that's our philosophy. Like, some people there's some friends I have, they want to change the world, right?
Yeah, that's not our philosophy.
That's a different thing.
Yeah.
We're kind of more lifestyle entrepreneurs, yeah. I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a big one for me, and I think it's been really helpful, is to have a couple people around you that are, that understand your business and understand your life, that when you have chaos, that you can go to them and they can sort of reset you. I mean, I've said this to you personally, but like, you and Andrea are definitely my people who, you know, when I need like a focus shift, you two are the best to remind me of all the stuff that's positive and also remind me that the problem's probably not as big as I think it is in the moment. Because I am definitely an overreactor about certain things. I'm not an overreactor about really bad, like when my kid breaks all his bones, I'm like, oh yeah, I was in a car accident. But like, drip doesn't work, and I'm like, you know, I'm losing my mind.
Exactly. So, yeah. Actually.
I know. I have that backwards, but yeah. But yeah, I think it's important to have people that you can talk to. Like, I was thinking Seller Summit. Like, I think it was really helpful that we were talking to people like Andrew and other people that have events and getting perspective on what we should do.
I know. I actually really miss Seller Summit just for the people that I hang out with. So it's like this battle in my mind back and forth whether I still want to do it after all the stress that happened.
the level of stress.
I got to remember what the value was now. Yes. Again.
You haven't seen people for so long, you don't remember the value of that.
Yeah.
So I think another takeaway is when you are experiencing chaos, you have to just figure out what the bare minimum is and only do that and say no to everything else.
Yes. Feel free to drop everything on the floor.
Yeah. I think it's the only thing that's important to remember in that is just communicate that you're dropping everything on the floor. And that's something that you and I, like, I struggle with you, is I don't want to tell you that I have to drop stuff. And then you get justifiably irritated because I think I can do it. And you're just like, tell me if you can't. And so, yeah. But I think if you're going to drop stuff, you just have to communicate with that with people.
That's true. I forgot that aspect. Yeah, I always ask you, are friendship. You sure?
Yes, yeah. Our friendship therapy session.
Exactly.
But I think that's important. I think figure out the bare minimum. Like, you need to send one email a week. You need to write one blog post a week. You need to record something once a week. Don't do anything else. Don't volunteer to be on other people's podcasts. Don't volunteer to help anybody. Don't make a meal for somebody. Good grief. Like, just do whatever it is that you have to do to stay afloat.
Yeah, definitely don't make a meal for somebody, especially if your food's not any good.
Oh, ouch. send a DoorDash gift card if that's the case. Okay, another one I think that we just talked about is it's okay to spend a day watching Netflix. Just a day.
I think it's good to be lazy and keep your schedule open at least one day a week. This one thing that we didn't kind of discuss is I still have my day. Usually it's on Friday. It shifts from week to week, but usually it's on Friday where I just sit and pontificate about what needs to get done or what direction I should be going in.
Yeah. Well, actually, we didn't even talk about this really at all, but I think everyone is going to experience some level of chaos. And so if you can keep your schedule where you have these buckets of free time, or like, not like, I'm overscheduled, you're underscheduled. So when you have chaos, it's actually pretty easy for you to manage because you have all this buffer time. When I have chaos, like I told you one day, I was like, you don't understand, I don't have an extra 5 minutes. Like, if something gets thrown off by 5 minutes, my whole day is screwed. And that's not a good thing. But I think it's important.
So is that your fault?
It's absolutely my fault. But
I'm
working on it. Like, I'm trying to be better. But I know that about myself. So I'm trying to be better at saying no, not volunteering for things, not taking on more than I can handle. But I think a lot of people do that. And if you have that buffer time already built into your life, then when chaos happens, it's not quite as disruptive as it is if you are literally every 5 minutes something going on.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.